Welcome back to another fascinating episode of Popcorn and Podcasting.
Yay! And we've got popcorn again this time.
We're not in the car.
Yep.
We're glad you're listening.
Yep. And to start out, we
answer our trivia.
Yes.
Yes. Right. So, our question was, how long in the New Testament, after the crucifixion of Christ, and when he came back, before he ascended to his Father, how long was Christ?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long was Christ with the apostles?
The answer is
40 days.
So, and we promised to announce what our next series is going to be on, and we've only got probably maybe 3 more podcasts of marriage and dating series, and then we're going to do music, arts, and media.
Yay!
Yay!
That should be fun. We're excited for it.
Yeah. We'll talk about everything from art and creativity to TV and movies and standards, stuff like that. A lot of ground to cover.
Yep.
It should be fun.
And if you have any talks or quotes that you think are awesome and that you'd like us to include, send us an email.
Oh, which reminds me that if you didn't hear the last CES Fireside talk that Elder Bednar gave.
Oh, that's definitely going to be included. Yeah, we'll probably read that talk straight.
That was in the, if you just go to LDSCES.org and go to the Firesides, it'll probably be the top of the list. But we'll share it too.
Yeah. So, we'll definitely be sharing that. Yeah. And we've gathered a lot of quotes and talks, but if there are any that you especially want included on that topic,
then yeah, please send it.
Yeah. And as a reminder, I guess, our email address, popcornandpodcasting@gmail.com.
Yep. 3 words and no spaces, obviously.
No capitals.
No capitals. Okay. We'll go into today's further topic. And we're just continuing on. We've kind of gone
through our timeline. We're married now, right?
Pretty much. And the quotes will be a little bit back and forth. I think this first one that Elder Groberg shares, he's not married yet, but, well, obviously, because he's on a mission. But that's where we're at on the timeline. You're talking mostly to married people. And those who aren't married should listen so that they can start working on these things now.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a lot easier if you've got some habits down before you're married.
Yep. Whoever you are now, you will be the same person when you get married.
Yeah.
No matter how far-fetched that seems. Okay.
I think everyone thinks they'll change when they get married. You know, instantly change as soon as you get married. But you don't.
And it's like your situation changes, but your personality is exactly the same.
And your habits.
In fact, you'll find yourself sinking back into your old personality before you were engaged. because while you're engaged, you're being your best self, and you're just your prime personality.
Yeah, ideally, you should continue to be your best self.
And and so try to continue.
Unfortunately, it doesn't always happen.
Yeah, and it will get harder to maintain that. Anyway, so, Elder Groberg, do you want to read first?
Sure. Several months after I regained my strength, after starvation following a hurricane, we were caught in another violent storm, only this time at sea. The waves became so big they flipped our small boat over.
By the way, John H. Groberg served his mission in Tonga, and they would take boats across to different islands. That's what's going on. This was on his mission as a young man.
Okay. Okay. The waves became so big that they flipped our small boat over, throwing the 3 of us into the raging, churning ocean. When I found myself in the middle of a tumultuous sea, I was surprised, scared, and a little upset. Why has this happened, I thought. I'm a missionary. Where's my protection? Missionaries aren't supposed to swim. But swim I must if I wish to stay alive. Every time I complained, I found myself underwater, so it didn't take long to quit complaining. Things are how they are, and complaining doesn't help. I needed every ounce of energy to keep my head above water and make it to shore. Having earned my Eagle Scout award, I was a pretty confident swimmer, but over time, the wind and the waves began to sap my strength. I never quit trying, but there came a time when my muscles simply would move no more.
I had a prayer in my heart, but still I began to sink. As I was going down for what could have been the last time, the Lord infused into my mind and heart a deep feeling of love for a very special person. It was as though I could see and hear her. Even though she was 8,000 miles away, the power of that love came rushing across those miles and, penetrating time and space, reached down and pulled me up, lifted me from the depths of darkness, despair, and death, and brought me up to the light and life of and hope. With a sudden burst of energy, I made it to shore, where I found my shipmates. Never underestimate the power of true love, for it knows no barriers.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another quote from Elder Jeffrey R. Holland. He says, "Husbands, you have been entrusted with the most sacred gift God can give you, a wife, a daughter of God, the mother of your children, who has voluntarily given herself to you for love and joyful companionship. Think of the kind things you said when you were courting. Think of the blessings you have given with hands placed lovingly upon her head. Think of yourself and of her as the god and goddess you both inherently are."
Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting. I mean, it's cool that he doesn't say, think of the god and goddess you will become, but that you already are.
Yeah. You may just be in an embryo stage still, but you are.
Much like an actual embryo. It is really a human being. It is a living human being, but it's, you know, it doesn't look like one yet.
Despite what all pro-choicers might say.
Exactly.
Okay, Marvin J. Ashton said, "After a night of intense pain and suffering one morning, a husband stricken with terminal illness said to his wife with great feeling, 'I am so thankful today.' 'For what?' she asked, knowing well his difficulty and trying situation. He replied, 'For God giving me the privilege of one more day with you.'"
Oh.
Aww.
Next quote. We just kind of have a collection of quotes today. It was Elder L. Tom Perry. One of my favorites. "There is no other way to start an eternal family unit than to be married in the proper place at the proper time by the proper authority, receiving the proper instructions that will lay the proper foundation." President David O. McKay said in his infinite wisdom, a prophet, an apostle quoting a prophet, pretty good.
Pretty good Torson.
Yep. "The exalted view of marriage as held by this church is given expressly in 5 words found in the 49th section of the Doctrine and Covenants. Marriage is ordained of God.
It is said that the best and noblest lives are those which are set toward high ideals. Truly no higher ideal regarding marriage can be cherished by young people than to look upon it as a divine institution. In the minds of the young, such a standard is a protection to them in courtship, an ever-present influence inducing them to refrain from doing anything that would prevent their going to the temple to have their love sealed in an enduring and eternal union. It will lead them to seek divine guidance in the selecting of their companions, upon the wise choice of whom their life's happiness here and hereafter is largely dependent. Our home joys are the most delightful earth affords, And the joy of parents in their children is the most holy joy of humanity. It makes their hearts pure and good. It lifts them up to their Father in heaven. Such joys are within the reach of most men and women of high ideals of marriage and home. Such joys are within the reach of most men and women if high ideals of marriage and home can be properly fostered and cherished. There we go. And we're going to put the reference to all these quotes in the show notes.
So you can find them.
Yes.
And probably read them better than we did. Elder Robert D. Hills. I want to thank my sweetheart and companion for her love. I was once told by the chairman of an organization, your greatest asset is your wife. That is a true statement.
Gordon B. Hinckley said, Brigham Young once said that if young people really understood the blessings of temple marriage, they would walk all the way to England if that were necessary. We hope they will not have to go anywhere near that far.
Elder Russell M. Nelson says, when your wife is sealed to you, her power and potential will increase yours. Vice versa, I guess, too.
Yep. Henry B. Eyring said, a man and his wife learn to be one. Yeah, to be one. By using their similarities to understand each other and their differences to complement each other. I like that quote a lot. Yeah. I'm going to read it again. A man and his wife learn to be one by using their similarities to understand each other and their differences to complement each other in serving one another and those around them. In the same way, we can unite with those who do not accept our doctrine but share our desire to bless the children of our Heavenly Father. I like that idea of using your similarities to understand each other and your differences to complement each other. Because people often, when they're talking about marriage and dating, focus so much on, oh, we have so much in common, or we don't have anything in common, you know?
Yeah.
And really, having something in common helps you understand each other, but having differences helps you to complement each other.
Yeah. One of our favorite differences is soup. I like my soup to be very liquidy, very few chunks in my soup. And he likes his soup.
I like all chunks.
Most
with a little bit of liquid.
Yeah, so he takes all the chunks out and then I have watery soup left for me. And we both, we like it that way.
It gets along and works out really great. And even some of the differences that seem inconsistent help us keep balance, because another one of our differences is I like a wide variety of foods, and yet I'll get bored of one single food quickly.
And I could eat the exact same thing for dinner every day for a month and be fine with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even really matter what it is.
I love macaroni and cheese, for example, but 2 days in a row is plenty. Anything more than that, and I'm like, no. so that seems like a difference that could lead to trouble. But really what it does is it keeps me being content with having fewer options. And it helps Jenny to get a little more variety
than I would on my own.
Yeah. So, okay.
Here's kind of a longish quote from Elder Russell M. Nelson. He says, as we brethren travel around the world, we sometimes see worrisome scenes. On a recent flight, I sat behind a husband and wife. She obviously loved her husband. As she stroked the back of his neck, I could see her wedding ring. She would nestle close to him and rest her head upon his shoulder, seeking his companionship. In contrast, he seemed totally oblivious to her presence. He was focused solely upon an electronic game player. During the entire flight, his attention was riveted upon that device. Not once did he look at her, speak to her, or acknowledge her yearning for affection.
His inattention. I see. His inattention made me feel like shouting, "Open your eyes, man! Can't you see? Pay attention! Your wife loves you! She needs you!" I don't know more about them. I haven't seen them since. Perhaps I was alarmed unduly. And very possible, if this man knew of my concern for them, he might feel sorry for me in not knowing how to use such an exciting toy. But these things I do know. I know that marriage between a man and a woman is ordained of God, and that the family is central to the Creator's plan for the eternal destiny of His children. I know that the earth was created, and that the Lord's church was restored so that families could be sealed and exalted as eternal entities. That's quite a statement right there.
Yeah.
That the world was created and the church was restored so that the family could be sealed and exalted in eternal entities. And I know
that,
yeah, that's everything. And I know that one of Satan's cunning methods is, methods of undermining the work of the Lord is to attack the sacred institutions of marriage and the family. Marriage brings greater possibilities for happiness than does any other human relationship. Yet some married couples fall short of their full potential. They let their romance become rusty, take each other for granted, allow others or other interests or clouds of neglect to obscure the vision of what their marriage really could be. Marriages would be happier if nourished more carefully.
Nurtured. Sorry.
More carefully. Very good.
I had a thought during all that, but now I can't remember it.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I think it's interesting how it says that one of Satan's cunning methods is to undermine the sacred, is to attack the sacred institutions of marriage and the family.
Yeah.
He's doing that in so many different ways.
Uh-huh.
Now we're going to read a cool little story.
Oh, this is one of our favorites.
Yes.
It's called Shmeely.
This is one we wanted to save for one of the last podcasts just because it's one of our favorites.
Yeah. Okay, it was written by Laura
Allen.
Okay. My grandfather and grandmother were married for over half a century and played their own special game from the time they had met each other. The goal of their game was to write the word Shmeely in a surprise place for the other to find. They took turns leaving Shmeely around the house, and as soon as one of them discovered it, it was their turn to hide once more. They dragged Shmeely with their fingers through the sugar and flour containers to await whoever was preparing the next meal. And they smeared it in the dew on the windows overlooking the patio where they always had a warm homemade pudding with blue food coloring. Sounds good. Shmeely was written in the steam left on the mirror after a hot shower, where it would reappear bath after bath. At one point, my grandmother even unrolled an entire roll of toilet paper to leave Shmeely on the very last sheet.
<It's> cute. There was no end to the places Shmeely would pop up. Little notes with Shmeely scribbled hurriedly were found on dashboards and car seats or taped on steering wheels. The notes were stuffed inside shoes and left under pillows. Shmeely was written in the dust upon the mantle and traced in the ashes of the fireplace. This mysterious word was as much a part of their house as the furniture. It took me a long time before I was able to fully appreciate my grandparents' game. Skepticism had kept some of them from believing in... Skepticism had kept some of them from believing in true love, one that is pure and enduring. However, I never doubted my grandparents' relationship. They had love down pat. It was more than their flirtatious little games. It was a way of life. Their relationship was based on a devotion and passionate affection, which not everyone is lucky to experience.
Grandma and Grandpa held hands every chance they could. They stole kisses as they bumped into each other in their tiny kitchen. They finished each other's sentences and shared the daily crossword puzzle and word jumble. My grandmother whispered to one of her friends about how cute my grandfather was, how handsome and old he had grown to be. She claimed that she really knew how to pick 'em. Before every meal, they bowed their heads and gave thanks, marveling at their blessings, a wonderful family, good fortune, and each other.
But there was a dark cloud in the couple's life. My grandmother had breast cancer. The disease had first appeared 10 years earlier. As always, my grandfather was with her every step of the way. He comforted her in their yellow room, painted that way so she could always be surrounded by sunshine, even when she was too sick to go outside. Now the cancer was again attacking her body. With the help of a cane and my grandfather's steady hand, they went to church every morning. But my grandmother grew steadily weaker until finally she could not leave the house anymore. For a while, my grandfather would go to church alone, praying to God to watch over my grandmother. Then one day, what everyone dreaded finally happened. My grandmother was gone.
Shmili was scrawled in yellow on the pink ribbons of my grandmother's funeral bouquet. As the crowd thinned and the last mourners turned to leave, my aunts, uncles, cousins, and other family members came forward and gathered around Grandma one last time. My grandfather stepped up to my grandmother's casket, and taking a shaky breath, he began to sing to her. Through his tears and grief, the song came, a deep and throaty lullaby. Shaking with my own sorrow, I will never forget that moment. I knew that, although I couldn't begin to fathom the depth of their love, I had been privileged to witness its unmatched beauty.
Shmili, Shmily, see how much I love you. See, isn't that a cute story?
Yeah, it's way cute.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the next one is Big Talk, so we'll save that for next time. And we'll pause for a moment while we come up with a trivia question. Okay, we've got one.
So, in the story of David and Goliath, we often emphasize how David totally, you know, just relied on the Lord. He went out there without armor on, with just his sling to kill Goliath with, and, you know, and obviously it worked. But was that all he did, or did
to
he
prepare,
have,
yeah,
you know, was he just going kind of on a...
Fully relying on the Lord, having no such experience, or...
Like Nephi did with getting into Jerusalem to get the plates, you know.
Yeah.
Like not knowing beforehand what he was going to do.
Or did he have some kind of preparation?
Yeah.
So there's your question.
Yep. Answer in the comments or an email if you want.
Yes.
And that would be cool.
Yeah. Muy cool.
Yep. And thanks for listening.